This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Which pets get to sleep on velvet mats? Naturellement, the aristocrats.
Which pets are blessed with the fairest forms and faces? Everybody wants to be a cat. Hallelujah. Who doesn't want to be a cat? Hey there, PlayStation Pop Experience. Welcome to Pop Goes the Classics. This is our Disney review pod of the animated classics. I am one of your co-hosts, Andy Addison. Thank you for joining me today. Today, we are talking about one of my favorite of the second golden age, I'm going to say. This is kind of one of those in the middle time period pods, not one of the original, like, you know, fantasy fairy tale pods. We had that kind of period of time from the late 60s to about the early 80s. So this is, like I said, though, this is one of my favorites. And let's break it down with the rest of the co-hosts. Bringing in Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you for asking. How are you, Andy?
I'm good, good. I'm glad to be back here talking Disney films with you.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Speaking of wonderful, rounding out our trio is Steve Riddle. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to be back for another round.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. We're in a really sweet spot. These are all these movies had come out before we were born, all of us, including me. Yes, I know. These are ones that we got to see, like, growing up a lot, and we, you know, have fond memories of, at least I do. So that's why I am in the driver's seat for this pod, because peel back the curtain a little bit. We kind of go around the horn and say, who loves this one most? And, I'm like, me. I might get a little emotional during this pod for certain reasons, and we'll say why in a few minutes. But let's kind of go around, though, and talk about our memories of seeing the movie for the first time early, you know, in our childhood. Miranda, was this one that was on in the rotation at your grandparents'?
I think it was, because it sounds really bad. I really like this movie, but it's not one that I can, like, you know, I've been able to tell you guys, like, oh, I vividly remember, blah, blah, blah. This one, I don't as much. So it either is going to be, like, on rotation at my grandparents', or, like, rented it on VHS or something of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. No, Steve, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this was one I always liked growing up. It was one of my favorites. Had some, you know, had it on VHS back in the day. And yeah, it was definitely one that was a good rotation at my house, along with a couple of other ones coming up here.
Yeah. Yeah, this was one. This is one of those, like, underrated, because you don't see it. We'll talk about it, as we always do at the end of the show. There's no Aristocats presence anywhere outside in the parks, really. I mean, there's some merchandise and stuff like that, and we have had some merchandise in our house with this. But the voice cast is tremendous. The characters, I mean, it's a little, you know, people can call it derivative, I guess, because there's some 101 Dalmatian aspects into it, where these fine similarities, especially, like, you know, when you're watching these and you're taking notes and you're trying to, you know, you want to talk about it and all that. And yeah, you start to notice certain things. And, you know, there are, as much as I love, you know, the voice cast, like I said, you kind of, like, you know, you have Phil Harris, who's Baloo. I mean, if you're going to really say what his signature role is, it's Baloo. Sterling Holloway has a minor role in this, but Roquefort is a very pivotal part of the plot in this movie. You have Paul Winchell, you know, as the Chinese cat, and Thurl Ravenscroft as the Russian cat, Nancy Culp as Frau Frau. Those are some of the, but we have some great, you know, Scatman Carruthers, who voiced so many great, he was Hong Kong Fooey, for crying out loud. you know, but he's, Scat Cat is one of my, probably my favorite character in the movie. And we have Ava Gabor, who was a big get at the time to be Duchess. So, you know, the movie, you know, it takes place in Paris. We have a lot of, you know, one thing we notice is there's a lot of movies that take place in France. And what do you guys think? So starting off, this movie has a disclaimer and is really well deserved, as we will get to later. But what do you think of, you know, they removed this on Disney Plus from kids' profiles, I guess. I think you have to be an adult to access this movie. I think is that true? You guys have
I think that's correct. I know that I read an article the other day saying that they had removed several from kids' profiles. Yes. I'll look and see which ones, and Steve may know for sure, but I read that they did. I didn't realize that this was one, but I did read that that happened.
I think it was this one, Dumbo, one or two others, right, Steve?
Yeah, I think it was, if you're like under 10, it won't be on there. I think, yeah, it was like this one, Dumbo, Peter Pan, what else? Maybe Lady and the Tramp. I can't exactly remember, but those were definitely the big ones that were removed. It's, yeah, it's like if you're under 10, those won't be on there. But if you're over 10, they'll still be there. They'll just have the disclaimer at the front.
Okay, so it's basically all the ones that they've gone in and added a disclaimer to, it sounds like, from what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
With racially insensitive depictions, I guess. Because this one, you know... It had been a while since I had seen it.
When I saw the disclaimer, I honestly was very confused at first. Like, I know we'll get there, but I was very confused.
I think I was like, oh yeah, I think I know why it's there. And then when we got there, I was like, ooh, yeah, mm-hmm. this is not good.
Okay, so yeah, Steve was correct. The only one in addition to the list that he gave is Swiss Family Robinson. They are all, and then Aladdin, including the live action version and sequels. All of those, Aristocats, Dumbo, Lady and the Tramp, Peter Pan, and Swiss Family Robinson have been taken off any profiles set for kids. So, like Steve said, if you're an adult, then you can watch them.
Oh, I like to find out by when we get there. Which actually, you know, what's funny is we're not that far away from it. When we get to the Aladdin, I really want to know because I mean, it's running through my head right now, quickly. Like it's like I feel like I have a tape fast forwarding through Aladdin right now, trying to figure out what it is. I mean, is it the slit some throats line in the beginning of the movie?
I don't know. I remember it. Complaint about Aladdin a few years ago that this one singular lady stirred up. And I should just save it for Aladdin, but I remember a complaint that one singular lady on Twitter stirred up, and a lot of people were like, ma'am, it is a fictional place, but okay.
Right. Well, it's like the guy who stirred up all the guy who stirred up all the Pepe Le Pew stuff. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Come on, people. I mean, that's just my personal opinion, but.
And I know we've talked about this before, and I think it's good to keep reminding people that the disclaimers are there, and some of them, rewatching them as an adult, I understand why the disclaimers are there, but I think it is better that we put a disclaimer and leave it there as a learning tool than to remove. I am one that is all for, like, I agree with you, this was wrong. I agree with you, this shouldn't have happened. I agree with you, we shouldn't worship this person. Continue down the list of I agree with you, but I have my but is removing and pretending it didn't happen doesn't get us anywhere, in my opinion. So I think having the disclaimer and then letting someone choose whether they want to show that or not is, I think, what should be done.
All right. So this movie starts off with a fun song by Maurice Chevalier. And Steve, what do you think of the opening credits on this? Because I really love this sequence.
Yeah, I agree. And when we get to the next film, that's one of my favorite opening sequences. Sequences too. And I like how, what I think is kind of cool is that they mention how they actually because they mention how the singer who sang the song he was in retirement, and they were able to bring him out just for this movie, which I think is pretty cool, because I think this may have actually been one of the last things he did before he passed away. So yeah. That was really cool. Yeah. but yeah, it's just kind of fun. You do kind of start seeing the recycled animation kind of rear its ugly head. And when we get, like I said, when we get to the next film, we'll talk about that more in depth. But as an opening sequence, it's definitely one of the best ones.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, what do you think?
I think it's really fun and catchy opening sequences. And I love that, you know, the, like we've talked about recycled animation, it's actually something we've talked about a lot in several of the last movies that we've done. And I think it is cool now watching it, seeing that take place and like where we can point that out. And I was going to ask, because you said like this one is in Paris and we've noticed a few others. Has anybody ever said why? Is that something that anybody knows? Like why the fascination with having some of these movies always set in France?
I don't know. Maybe it's just... just the
affinity. I didn't know if it was something somebody knew. Like
I don't know. No, I mean, I think they just find the stories, and I mean, where could this really? I mean, it probably could take place in another setting. I think France really adds to this.
Yeah, for sure. I just you pointed that out. And I was like, wait, is there a reason? Like, was there a? I didn't know.
No, I just hadn't noticed that it. There's been quite a few. Taking place, mm-hmm. and it's in Paris in 1910, and it opens up with the kittens. Let's kind of get into the story, though, and talk about it. So wealthy and aging socialite Madame Adelaide Bonafamille, I hope I didn't butcher that too bad, lives with her cat Duchess and Duchess's three kittens, Berlioz, Toulouse, and Marie, and also there is her butler Edgar. One day, she sends for a friend, George Hattecourt. The task is to finalize and make up the Madame's will. Unknown to the two of them, Edgar is listening in. Madame notes that she has no living relatives and considers her cats to be as much of her family as anything else. Edgar listens and is shocked to realize that the Madame is planning to give her entire fortune to them with the estate that she turned over to Edgar once the cats pass away. So, what do you think of these? First of all, let's talk about the kittens. We get introduced. Duchess is a proper, you know, she's a, you know, again, we talk about parallels. Very Lady and the Tramp-esque, where she's the lady, and we're going to meet the tramp later on. But we have these three cute, you know, kittens, all named after famous French personalities, for lack of a better term. You know, we have Marie, who is named after Marie Antoinette, mm-hmm. and she, you know, is a the proper little lady. And then you have Berlioz, who's named after the composer. And then you have Toulouse, who's named after Toulouse-Lautrec, because he's an artist. So my emotional is starting to kick in. Yes. So little personal note, I named my cat Toulouse after the kitten from this movie. Unfortunately, after 20 years of being in my life and my family's life, my children, all that, he recently passed away. So it was kind of sad, like, that, like, when I went to, like, you know, we were catching up on the pod, like, oh, let's see what's up next. I'm like, oh. Mm-hmm. So I apologize if my voice cracks at all. But the plot, though, where, you know, I can understand Edgar getting a little peeved here about hearing the cats. You hear those stories all the time. This woman, like, you know, passed away, left her millions to her dog.
Yeah.
So, Miranda, what do you think of these kittens and their personalities? And then talk about, Edgar is, you know, kind of not saying that he's justified, but, you know, he should be pissed, but he really goes a little too extreme here.
Oh, too extreme for sure. Because you would assume he's been very faithful, and he felt like they had, and you could tell from their interaction with each other, you felt like they had more of a friendship than that they cared more for each other than just, you know, servant and madam. And I think anyone would rightfully take a slap in the face, but way too dramatic and extra here on his choice. The kittens always cracked me up, though, because they're very prim and proper and just very cute. And so, like, you kind of know, like, oh, these poor kittens are going to get a rude awakening, like, as to how I'd imagine this is like my dog, because unfortunately I spoil my dogs that if they ever, like, were lost or something, they'd be like, oh, this is why mom wouldn't let us do that. You know, like, oh, like rude awakening. I don't know. I feel bad for Edgar, but did he go too far? I think so.
Well, he starts off like, you know, you think he's like this nice guy, and then all of a sudden, like, he gets like this heel turn that comes like fairly quickly, you know.
Yeah.
I think Berlioz and Toulouse want to be, you know, have a little streetwise to them, and they keep having to get, Justice keeps reeling them in. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I love the kittens. They're, I've always liked Toulouse is always my favorite. And yeah, it's kind of, you see they each have their own little personalities. Like Toulouse specifically wants to be like a, you know, street tough alley cat. Marie's the proper prim like her mother, and Berlioz is kind of in the middle of the two. And I agree with you about Edgar. I mean, when we see him in the beginning, like you said, he's very loyal to her, and you know, he seems like he truly cares about her. And then when he finds out, you know, that he's not gonna get the fortune the cats are, then you can kind of see, you kind of definitely feel for him. And I always found it funny, like you said, how people leave their fortunes to like their pets. It's like, what are the pets really gonna do? Like the pets, right, can't do anything with that. Why would you? Yeah. Why wouldn't you do something like donate it to a charity or something, or you know, give it to somebody that's gonna need it. Like do something useful with it.
Like if you love animals, maybe like donate to a shelter, like take care of a shelter for the rest of their lives, or like set the animals up to make sure they're taken care of. But like, what are they gonna do with millions of dollars? I am so with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I also like I like that little scene there where her lawyer Huffcourt comes, and he and Edgar get through the little trouble of getting up the yes, steps. Because it's like Huffcourt's like, he should really take Edgar's advice and use the elevator, but he's like so stubborn about wanting to go up the steps, and he ends up riding on Edgar's back, which is really funny. And it like, and Huffcourt's like completely oblivious to all of that.
Yeah, so he's a fun, goofy character. You know, he's just silly and with his dancing and everything. Yeah, he's kind of the anti-Edgar, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, again, if you have sympathy for Edgar for like about like 5 minutes until you see what he really wants to do to them. So, right. You know, mm-hmm. So Edgar, he's not happy, and he, you know, as the cats will easily outlive him, he thinks, he slips some sleeping pills into their daily serving of cream. And once they have passed out, he takes them to the countryside, attempting to abandon them. However, his plans are ruined when a pair of dogs named Lafayette and Napoleon give chase. Edgar abandons the cats in the field before heading back to Paris. The next day, the cats awaken and find themselves not in their home, but in the countryside, and soon meet a cat named Thomas O'Malley. After some talk, O'Malley offers to help get the family back to the madam. So he doesn't want to kill them. So,
no.
But, you know, he wants them out of the picture. I'm not sure how far outside of Paris he goes on his motorbike here. But, Steve, what do you think of his plot? And then, you know, the interference by these two goofy dogs, Napoleon and Lafayette, and then the introduction of Thomas O'Malley, of course.
You say that Edgar didn't want to kill him, but considering how many sleeping pills he put on that milk, I mean, right? I mean, he emptied the whole bottle into that thing. I mean, I'm surprised that he wasn't trying to kill them, but I guess he figured, you know, he just dump them off in the countryside where they'll never be, you know, because you figure he's thinking, well, these cats have been, you know, prim and proper house cats their whole lives. They're not going to survive out in the wilderness. So I think, you know, it's a pretty good idea. And then, like you said, Napoleon and Lafayette, who are a great pairing. I mean, you got, you know, Lafayette, who's, you know, Napoleon really looks down on Lafayette. He, you know, is like, I'm the leader. I do, you know, make all the decisions around here. And them chasing Edgar throughout the countryside is such a great such a great chase scene, and they're like going all over the place. And yeah, the introduction of Thomas is really great, where he's like just, you know, singing about himself, and he comes upon Duchess and instantly starts smitten with her. And yeah, just a great series there.
Yeah, it's again, and you know, how it's a little derivative here because this is our tramp basically to Duchess's lady. And also the fact that it's voiced by Phil Harris, you know, his intro is kind of similar to Baloo, where Baloo was off singing and that's how you first meet him. Not taking anything away from Thomas O'Malley as a character, which he is great. He is, you know, really has a lot of redeeming qualities to him. But, and also one thing to remark too, is the beautiful landscapes between when they go from Paris to the French countryside. Miranda, what do you think of this part where, you know, Edgar's plot, the introduction of Thomas O'Malley?
I love Thomas O'Malley. He, like, his introduction and the whole O'Malley the Alley Cat song mm-hmm. is one that sticks in my mind, like when you're talking about when somebody's like Disney songs, like that's one that like pops in pretty quickly. The two dogs, Napoleon and Lafayette, are some of my favorite characters, which I think it's kind of reminiscent of the dogs that we all loved from 101 Dalmatians too. Like their demeanor and just like they're kind of funny and those little side characters that you like really fall in love with and you want more of. So this, I feel like this whole sequence is really good. And I do agree with Steve that like, yeah, I know he didn't want to kill him, but I mean, come on.
A little heavy handed.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, one thing that cracked me up about Napoleon and Lafayette, that they have Southern accents, yet they're in France. Yeah, the accents are kind of all over the place, by the way, in this movie, because you know, if it's in France, Thomas O'Malley's got an American accent. You know, we understand that the two geese we meet later on are on vacation, but the you know, only Marie has really the French accent of the kitten, so they're kind of playing with that a little bit. But yeah, I do enjoy the action sequence. It's one of those, you know, the image of them in the motorbike, the dogs with the ears flying is one of those ones that you see in a lot of materials. So anyway, we get back to Paris, and a house mouse in the resident's name, Roquefort, voiced by Sterling Holloway, confers with the coach horse, Frau Frau, which is, I'm trying to remember the actress who voices her, but we've heard her before also in other movies. They're both unsure of what become of their friends, and then Edgar comes in, very chipper, and basically monologues, and it shows the headline about the mysterious catnapper taking off with Duchess and the children. He seems to think that he's gotten away with his little crime until he realizes that he left his hat and umbrella out in the countryside, and he rushes out to retrieve them. Meanwhile, Thomas, Duchess, and the kids hitch a ride on a milk truck before being found out by the driver, and then they attempt to follow the train track until a train causes them to dive off. However, little Marie gets swept up in a nearby river. Thomas jumps in to save them, and the family follows him downstream. So Edgar is kind of not smart, Miranda. We have no clue that animals can talk. You know, who knows that a mouse and a horse can really confer about cats? But what'd you think of him? You know, we had to, you know, get them involved and get Edgar. You know, people had to learn about the cats. They couldn't just. We have no movie if he doesn't like spill his beans. So, what do you think of this here and Roquefort and Frufru getting into the movie here more?
I mean, I knew it was going to happen. That's one of those things like you assume it's going to happen because that's how it takes place. I don't know. This, I felt like this was part that like I needed to happen, but I remember not being like super interested here. Like, I know that sounds really bad, and I know this is a movie that both of you love. It's one that I really like, but it's not my favorite. So in this part, I got a little lost. It's like I was like playing with my phone as an adult. I was just kind of like, well, we're here. Then I was like, oh yeah, I'm watching this movie. Back to this. So that sounds horrible, but I don't know why. I really enjoyed the beginning, and I like was paying attention to Edgar and was like, you suck. And then I got here and was like, I don't know where I'm at.
All right. Well, Nancy Culp is Miss Hathaway. That's where I knew her from.
Oh, okay.
Beverly Hillbillies. So Steve, what'd you think of Edgar spilling the beans here, and then we kind of get the whole scene with the milk truck and the train tracks?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you figure Edgar's gonna speak to. He figures, you know, what's a horse gonna say? You know, you can't spill the beans to them. And I like how they established early on Roquefort is, you know, friends with good friends with Duchess and the kittens, to the point that when they're drinking the milk laced with the sleeping pills with them not realizing it, he brings a cracker over and drinks it with them, and he ends up getting knocked out with it too. And then after they find out, you know, after Bonfamille finds out that they're missing, Roquefort actually goes out into the storm and tries to find them, which I thought was kind of cute. And yeah, then we get to when they get to the that poor milk truck driver, just, you know, getting,
he was, you know, he was pissed.
Yeah. And of course his truck had the it was, you know, obviously we're in the 1910s, so, you know, automobiles are still kind of in their early stages, so he has to use the crank at the in the front of the car of the truck to start it back up. So that gives the the cat's ample time to get on the truck. And then when he like sees him in the back, you know, he ends up chasing him off. And like you said, then they get on the train track. And, you know, and of course, you know, the ones that they just when they're on the track is right when a train happens to show up and they all have to get off it. And unfortunately, Marie falls into the river and O'Malley ends up saving her. And that's where we get the meeting the geese. But yeah, that's definitely some that was some good stuff in there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote my notes. Mom always said not to play on the train tracks.
This is true.
Some good lessons in this movie. So we get like Steve mentioned, we get the these two female geese, Abigail and Amelia, who are on vacation. I guess the group then follow them to their Uncle Waldo. The journey takes them to a restaurant where Uncle Waldo has escaped from becoming the main course. However, being marinated in white wine has caused Uncle Waldo to be quite tipsy. Meanwhile, Edgar returns to the countryside and manages to get back his hat and umbrella, not before Napoleon and Lafayette attempt to nip him at his heels. So Steve, I kind of love this Uncle Waldo scene. You know, that's one thing we've seen in Disney a bit is some kind of drunk foul, so to speak, a few times. I believe that the stork in Dumbo was also a bit little inebriated, right? Dumbo gets inebriated, so
yes, he does.
Yeah, I guess it was funny to be drunk, I guess, back then. I don't know. I mean, it's always funny to make fun of somebody. Well, somebody who's been a little too inebriated. But then we get we get Napoleon Lafayette versus Edgar, the sequel, which is a really fun sequence. Steve, what'd you think of that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Waldo too. It's like he goes to Paris for vacation and he almost gets, you know, basically becomes a special of the day for the cafe. And he complains to Amelia and Abigail is like that they use white wine for him and not sherry. And that's what he's most upset about. Yeah, he's funny. And then, yeah, so I was about Napoleon Lafayette going after Edgar again. I was reading up on it and said apparently that first scene where they chase him when like Edgar's taking the cats into the countryside and they chase after him, that was supposed to be the only time we see them. Oh. But apparently the developers enjoyed working with the two actors that voiced Napoleon Lafayette so much that they added this bonus scene in so that they could get some more interactions with them. So I thought that was kind of cool. And yeah, just again, Edgar trying to get his, you know, get all his stuff back and they go on another chase scene. And I'll tell you what, Napoleon's got some good hearing. If he can hear Edgar coming, cause Edgar's shoes were squeaking, it's just based on the squeak, he can perfectly identify what kind of shoes they are. I thought that was kind of funny, but yeah, Waldo was good. And I like that they added Napoleon Lafayette back in for an extra scene just cause they were so good in the first scene that they were in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Miranda, what do you think?
I do. I love them. And it was kind of, I did not know that tidbit that you found out that they added them back in because of that, but I'm glad that they did because again, they're some of the favorite parts of this movie for me. They're hysterical. So are these geese, like him being drunk because he was basically marinated I remember as a kid thinking that was the funniest thing in the world. Cause my grandmother has always cooked dishes with wine. And I remember she would be like, some for the recipe, some for the chef. And she'd drink some for some reason when he's drunk like that, it just cracks me up and reminds me of when she would say things like that. but I want to know, like, is Edgar's belongings that important? Cause it was just like a hat and an umbrella, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. If I got chased out of an area by two dogs, funny dogs or not, if I got chased out of an area by two dogs because I committed a crime, I don't think I'm going back for my hat and my umbrella. That seems very illogical. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know if his name's on. They didn't do fingerprints back then. Yeah, you gotta come.
Right. I mean, what does it matter? And like, nobody knows what you did exactly. I mean, yes and no, but like, they're not gonna be like, oh, his hat and umbrella, he did something bad. Like,
I think the fact that his plot got screwed up, so mm-hmm. he doesn't really know what happened to the kittens. And
that's true. Yeah.
So I think he's like, you know, his plan didn't go the way it was supposed to.
You think there's some remorse at this point too? Maybe.
I don't think there's remorse. I just think that he's in his own head right now.
Okay.
Because he's unsure. He like, you know, he's worried because it didn't go the way it was supposed to. So he's like, oh well, I screwed that got screwed up. What happens if they find this and that, and they say we have this, and then, you know, people start putting two and two together.
Right.
You know, maybe it's a standard. You know, what if the madam sees it and she could recognize it.
Which she probably would. I mean, if he wore like the same hat all the time. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was strange that like he got chased off the night before. Things went bad. Like, I'm not going back for my stuff. Like, oh well. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we get back to Paris. The cats are almost home, but worn out by their trip. O'Malley then takes them to Scat Cat's abode in an abandoned building. Scat Cat and his gang of alley cats entertain the family before heading out to the night. So here is where I think the disclaimer comes into play, because we have, you know, very the cats are certain nationalities. So we have the Russian cat, which is Thurl Ravenscroft. We have the English cat, which is voiced by Lord Tim Houston. The Italian cat, Vito Scotti, and then we get the Chinese cat. Voiced by Chinese Winchell. Paul Winchell. Who, you know, that's Chinese Winchell. That is the voice of Tigger, basically.
Yeah.
You know. And Thurl's Ravenscroft, he is Tony the Tiger. And also the narrator. He's the singer of the Grinch song. So these are great voices. But these are such caricatures of these races.
Yes.
That, I mean, I again, love this movie, and this is probably one of my favorite scenes because it's the everybody wants to be a cat scene. But the lines of the Chinese cat, you know, Egg Fu Young and da da da. This is where the disclaimer comes from. You know, Miranda, what are your thoughts on the song and the scene?
So the song "Everybody Wants to Be a Cat" again. When you talk about let's name Disney songs, it's probably one of the others that I think of immediately, pretty immediately. I think it's another one that even if it's not your favorite movie, you tend to know. If you heard it, you would know it. I enjoy the song. I really like it. I may get in trouble for saying that. I don't know. Like, I really like it. I think it's funny. Now, you remember when we started the show, I said when we saw the disclaimer, I couldn't remember why. And then I watched this part and I was like, oh yeah, okay, I see it now, that's why. And I get it, but I think, again, as I said before, use it as a learning tool, because you're right, some of those lines, eeks, you know. Yeah. Like, ugh. But the song I love, like, mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah, it's up there. I don't know if you guys ever saw the classic Mr. Magoo cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But he had his sidekick or his whatever, and he was very you know, gotta remember, it was from a period of time. They were all Chinese or Japanese or Oriental was depicted a certain way in animation, and it's, again, like you said, it's a learning tool, because it's just, yeah, this is. I cringed actually when I heard Chinese cat's lines.
Yes.
I mean, I'm fine with the Italian cat and the English cat and the whatever other cat is there, the Russian cat, but. Yeah. Steve, what do you think of the song and the scene?
Oh, the song's great. It's definitely one of the most memorable. You know, it's got some great, you know, great energy behind it. You can't help but dance to it. I'm kind of the opposite. I wasn't that offended by the Chinese cat and his lines. It's, I don't know, maybe it's just because I don't get easily offended by that stuff. I didn't care. It just don't bother me none. But as a whole, yeah, it's a great scene, and seeing them all dance and the kittens get involved, and, you know, and then that nice little part with Dutch playing the harp and kind of slowing it down a bit before the beat picks back up. And it's just such catch, you know, the lyrics are just really catchy. It's like, everybody wants to be a cat. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you can't help but sing to it. And that's, I think, one of the greatest, perks to a Disney film is when you have a song that's just so catchy that you just want to sing along with it. Makes it memorable, even if the makes the song memorable, even if the movie itself is not as memorable as the song.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying like I'm offended by it, but you know, I'm just more sensitive to it, I guess, so to speak. It actually registers with me. It's not like I'm like, oh, I'm offended, but that's what I mean in my personally, like, because I'm not of that race, but I'm like, kind of like, you see it and you can understand why people could deem it insensitive. It's like, it doesn't go over your head.
I agree with both of you in the sense of like, I am also one that doesn't get as offended as some people do, but I could definitely see where a person that is Oriental would be like, that is not okay. I am upset. That bothers me. And it's one of those like, okay, Disney, you're doing what you're supposed to, putting the disclaimers and then letting someone decide if it is offensive to them. And if they're going to watch it or show their children or say, hey, this is offensive and this is why we don't do this and use it as a teaching tool. But I agree. I think it's once he said, I got a little skeeved, but maybe it was just because I was like, I would see where someone would be bothersome.
And that's kind of like what the point of the disclaimer is. It's like, it just makes you aware.
Yes.
And where you won't make that mistake going forward. Because, I mean, he's playing to the piano with chopsticks and he's saying Shanghai, Hong Kong, A Fu Young. I mean, there's nothing.
As a kid, I'm not going to lie. Fortune cookie always wrong. That part had me rolling. Like, I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And now I'm like, oh, okay. Perceive it differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about perspective. That's all it really
is.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the movie personally, because it's just me. I mean, I, you know, understand. That's all. That's all it is. You have to understand and have compassion, awareness. So, we have this great scene here with it's like being in like a jazz club, basically. After the kittens are put to bed, Duchess O'Malley share a tender moment. While Dutcher tells her eagerness to return to the Madam, O'Malley, who has never really known kindness from humans, thinks that Madam sees Duchess and her kittens as house pets. Duchess explains that Madam sees them as more than this, and they are the equivalent of a family to her. Then the next morning, O'Malley leads them back to the mansion after saying his goodbyes. The cats head into the front door, only to be confronted by Edgar, who quickly throws them in the sack. Roquefort has seen the whole thing, and after going to Duchess and the kittens in the sack, is told to find O'Malley. Roquefort runs off and catches up with O'Malley. Thomas heads back to the mansion, tells Roquefort to find Scat Cat and his gang. So Edgar is very determined here. Mm-hmm. We had a nice tender moment of like, you know, she's like, you could come home. And he's like, you know, they could use a dad. And O'Malley's not used to that. So, Steve, what do you think of this where we get the real romance here aspect of the movie? And the, you know, kind of the class. I mean, this is, again, Lady and the Tramp-esque right here. So what do you think of this? And then we get a, you know, we're pause right before Roquefort has to go into the lion's den, so to speak.
Make some good comparisons there with Lady and the Tramp about how, you know, Duchess is like, you know, to Thomas, come home with us. You know, I'm sure the Madam will take you in. And Thomas is like, well, you know, he's used to being in Alley County. He's like, well, why don't you guys stay with me? And I think if Duchess didn't have the kittens to look after, you could probably see, I wouldn't think Duchess wouldn't mind staying with him. But I think because mainly of the kittens, she wants to go back to the home, to her home. And, you know, Thomas kind of realizes that and he's like, all right, I'll take you guys back. And yeah, that moment where, after Roquefort sees him come home and then he sees Edgar, he's like, oh, I got to stop him. And, you know, he ties his shoelaces together. And just as Edgar's popping a bottle open and the cork hits Roquefort and he's like, oh, he got me. That's funny. And then like when the cats, they start meowing to get the attention and Edgar kind of gets that looks like, oh crap, they're back. And then he brings them in, you know, make it like, you know, he cared about them. And then like, like you said, putting them in the sack. And then they have to tell, Roquefort to go get O'Malley, and he does, and then O'Malley tells them, like, well, go get my friend, go get Scat Cat, my friends, and Roquefort's like, well, you know I'm a mouse to you, and O'Malley's like, well, just tell them it's me, and they'll, and, you know, you'll have no problem, and as we'll see, you know, what happens there, but, yeah, that's a good, good sequence there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, what do you think of the romance here?
So, yes, it is very much like Lady and the Tramp. The adult me wants to be like, this is such a Hallmark thing. Like, it is, where she's like, stay with us or stay here, the, you know, the different sides of the track kind of story. So I enjoy it because you guys know I love that stuff. so it is. I love it. And I really like the little mouse guy. He's funny, too. He's another one of those side characters that you just really enjoy that he's part of it. So as we... as we're about to move further, you know, we get more. But I do. I really enjoyed this part. I think it is kind of like I said in Lady and the Tramp, if I remember what I said correctly, it was necessary. Kind of the same at that same pivotal moment where Tramp and her get separated and, you know, well, no, I'm a wild dog or whatever it was he said. And, you know, you're not. So it's kind of that you have to have this happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think O'Malley, too, here, there's a little difference here because he falls in love with the kittens as well.
He does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think him and Toulouse have a special relationship, I think, more than any of the other two. They kind of like, you know, have a, he's trying to work on them to become an alley cat and all that. Like, and like Steve made a good point where Berlioz is kind of in the middle and Marie, you know, is more, is very Duchess. So we get back to this mansion stables. Edgar puts the cats in the trunk, telling him of his plans to send him to Timbuktu. He already called a truck to pick up the trunk. When O'Malley bursts in, attacks Edgar. Then soon after, Scat Cat and his gang arrive to help. Roquefort, you know, like Steve said, he told him, tell him O'Malley sent you. And luckily, you know, Scat Cat, you know, listens to him. And in, you know, they arrive and Roquefort manages to pick the lock and get the cats out. Scat's cat gang with some help from Frou Frou managed to knock Edgar into the trunk and out of the stables door just in time for the pickup service to take it away. Then we had some time afterwards that the madam found out that Edgar has gone missing for some unknown reason, calls on George to repurpose her will to remove him from any inheritance. And then Thomas is welcomed into the family and madam has chosen to allow her mansion to be a safe haven for all alley cats in Paris. And then we get the ending with Scat Cat and his gang throwing a wild party in the mansion. So, Miranda, we have this great, you know, kind of almost choreographed fight scene with the music going around to it. You know, Scat Cat and the gang and Thomas come to the rescue. Edgar gets his comeuppance. And we get the happy ending where, you know, you guys made the great points of, you know, when you leave it to your pets, what they really are, what they're really doing. And I know a lot of people have done this. Is that, yeah, it's left to my pets, but in reality, it's just to make sure that they're taken care of. And when their time comes, that this goes to the charity to take care of other of their kind. So, Miranda, talk about the Edgar finally getting his comeuppance and the ending of the movie.
So I think everybody is excited when it finally happens. I think what the sad part is... This had to take place, right? It all had to take place, or O'Malley would have never, our love story would have never happened. O'Malley would have never become part of the family and realized that he could be part of a family, right? But I think one of the kind of sad moments is when Edgar is missing and she calls and says, let me change the will, because that means Edgar didn't realize he was getting something. She was willing him something. And he just was so greedy in that moment, or so jealous, actually envious in that moment, that he didn't even stop to think, oh, that doesn't mean that I'm not getting anything. It's just the cats are basically getting a huge chunk as if they were my children. And at that, it's at that moment that you're like, see, this is like greed taking place, like envy. It's teaching another lesson that, I mean, kids probably aren't getting that, but it's teaching another lesson of like being patient and not being envious of what someone else has and not being greedy. Because if he hadn't, then Edgar would still be there. And when she passed, he would still get something, which, you know, but I think everybody enjoyed the moment in which we realized like he's paying for his crimes, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he gets sent to Timbuktu, apparently, which people probably didn't know that much about back then.
No, but that's what people always said growing up. I remember, you know, I'll put you in a box and send you to Timbuktu. And, like, then you grow up and you realize there really is a Timbuktu. And you're like, oh, okay.
Like, yeah, it sounds like a made-up place.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh. Well, I mean, where I live sounds made up, but it's okay.
Steve, what do you think of the ending of this with the cats to the rescue here?
Yeah, this was really good. Like you said, the one bit where Rookford has to get the alley cats, and at one point he forgets O'Malley's name, and they almost kill him. And then, like, at the last minute, he finally remembers it, and they're like, he's like, they realize he's on their side, and they all head off. And my favorite part is they run past that cafe where that guy's at the table drinking, and he sees the cats running first, and then the mouse chasing after them. He kind of gets this star look on his face, and he just dumps his wine out of his bottle. He's like, I'm never drinking again. I love that part. And then, yeah, like, when they all show up and they fight Edgar, and my favorite part of that is Roquefort's trying to get the figure out the combination to the padlock while all this chaos is going on. Then he just shouts for everyone to be quiet, and they like just stay still, and then he gets the lock open, and then they resume the fights. So I thought that was great too. And then they finally kind of overpower Edgar, throw him in the trunk, and then he gets shipped off. And then, like, we see at the end, O'Malley does get accepted into the family. And yeah, that's it. I did find that interesting too, how they were talking about Edgar and, like, how he was going to be factored into the will. And if he had just, you know, listened to everything they had to say, he probably would have, you know, he probably would have been fine. But instead, like was said, the greed took over, and there was at that point no more reasoning with him. And it's funny how she just, like, decides to open the shelter for any alley cat that wants to show up, and we see all the alley cats together and they're partying again. And I love how we see, like, the geese are listening in and they're singing, and then we see Napoleon Lafayette for one more time. And you know, Lafayette's like, hey, Napoleon, I think it sounds like the end. And Napoleon's like, no, I'm the leader, I'll say when it's the end. And then we see the words hit him on the side. He's like, oh, it's the end. So I thought that was that funny. But yeah, it's definitely a great way to end the film, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, it's very underrated. Edgar should not have eavesdropped. If he had not been eavesdropping, he wouldn't he wouldn't have been thrown into this tizzy that he was into with this nefarious plot of his. But yeah, again, one of my favorites of the like I said, this is from the, you kind of equate to different eras, I guess. You have the, you know, original fairy tale golden age, and then you have the second golden age, which starts with Little Mermaid. But this is in, like, that middle part where there are some great ones and some, you know, kind of medium, I guess, so to speak. There's nothing bad in this time period. It's just, you know, they were still figuring their way out.
I think not as memorable, maybe, because when you go through when you ask people, like, what is your favorite Disney, you get a lot of the ones before or after the current kind of group that we're in. It's a pattern that I've realized lately.
Yes. So, and this actually was inspired on the book the story that this is based on was inspired by a true story of a Parisian family of cats that did inherit a fabulous fortune. So I'm just kind of, like, going through some of the trivia here. But yeah, this is, and we're still in that period where, you know, Walt's death is still relatively fresh. And also they're focusing on, you know, Disney World opening. So maybe that's why the animation, you know, isn't as remembered, because there's a lot of other things going on with the company right now. But like I said, it's a fun movie. Unfortunately, you don't see a lot of, like, you can't come up with a theme park ride, really, from the Ears to Cats.
Right.
But you can find merchandise. It's mostly the kittens, Marie in particular, that is really pushed hard. I mean, I remember, I hope she still has it somewhere, but they had in the Disney store when Jessica was really little, Birthstone Marie's, where they had her with a collar for every month, basically. And Jessica's born in May, so hers is an emerald. And I had it all the way up on a high shelf. And I don't know how 4 or 5 year old Jessica got up there to get it, but she got it down and the hair was all kind of messed up a little bit, but I think she still has it somewhere. But yeah, Marie is really the merchandise star of this movie. I mean, I do have a stuffed Toulouse somewhere. I think it's packed away because I had the real thing for 20 years. But
right.
All right. So what do you guys think of the legacy? And they did do, I don't know, did they ever do direct to video sequels on this movie?
Wasn't there... there was something. Give me a second while I'm looking. So I was trying to do research because this is one of the few movies that we go through that there, like you said, there's not really a park presence. Mm-hmm. And apparently Disney France, and I don't know if this is still to this day, but I found a message forum board where people share Disney information with one another. It's actually called Disboards, if you're interested.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Okay, so I found in 07, 08, people were asking for Aristocats, or especially Marie. And if this is still the case, there's a picture included where she appears in Epcot in France. So if that's still a thing, which, you know, sometimes they move some of those characters out that just don't go as well, or maybe she's one of those like Stitch, you only can find him in like one place on one day of the week for like 30 minutes like mm-hmm. I don't know but it appears she does or has at one point appeared in the park, and it would make sense that they would choose her. She is probably, like you said, the most well-known. Mm-hmm. And then I was just kind of like looking through things, so I don't see that there was any a direct to DVD. I thought there was. For mm-hmm. some reason, I thought there was like Aristocats 2 or something. And maybe I'm thinking of, maybe it's because Oliver and Company.
Yes.
Had a direct to like number 2. But I did learn while I was trying to find out is that there was a sequel planned called Aristocats 2. So maybe that's what it was in my brain. It was supposed to be direct to video. It was scheduled to release in 2007. But the production ended up being canceled early 06 after Disney acquired Pixar. And then they kind of canceled all their planned direct-to-video sequels. Because mm-hmm. as you mentioned before, that's when we start switching and there's less direct-to-DVD.
That was when John Lasseter took over as head of
animation. The new age, basically.
That was the first one. One of his first directives was to cancel the direct-to-DVD sequels.
Yeah. So there should have been a 2, and I thought there was, but I think I'm confusing that with Oliver and Company. Mm-hmm. And then I thought it was really funny a minute ago, Steve, that you mentioned how they all kind of like stop and stand still. Because one of the things I found when I was looking for sequels and like if they took place was like facts and goofs about the movie, right? Like there apparently was an entire list of goofs. If you guys want to go look those up, I won't read them all because we'll be here a while. But fandom, it's a website. It's like fandom, and usually it's like Disney.fandom.com or Marvel.fandom.com. There's like for everything out there, there's a fandom site usually. And the reason this one caught my attention is because you were like, you know, he basically is like, everybody be quiet so he can break the padlock. And they said, what's strange about this is since Madam and the other humans can't understand animals, it's very strange that Edgar stops as well. Like during that fight scene where they all stop because he said, stop. Edgar stops too. And they're like, oh crap, we didn't think about that because they're not supposed to be able to understand the animals. So yeah, there's actually several goofs. I was very intrigued by this, so I would go check those out. And then it even says in some of the books sometimes the two boy cats are mistaken, so like Toulouse and they're confused, yeah, with each other. Like, I guess when they were written or drawn or talked about, like, sometimes they flip-flop them on accident. So I would go check those out. I think you guys will find those interesting. But that one caught my attention more than anything because of what Steve just said.
All right. So any final thoughts that you'd like to share that we haven't, Steve?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. Like you said, it's definitely – it is a fun film. It's, like I said, it was one of my favorites. It still is. And it's very interesting. Like you said, we are in a very interesting place because it's been a couple of years since Walt had passed away. Disneyland was continuing to grow. They've got Walt Disney World starting to come up here in a few years. And I think another interesting part about it is that we're entering a very unique phase where a lot of the old guard of the animation is starting to fade away. And we've got these new animators starting to crop up who are wanting to make their name in the business. And we'll kind of see that play out here closer to the end of the decade. But yeah, we're in a very interesting spot here because these films, you ask a lot of people about these films, and I think a lot of people say they're not, they may not be regarded as classics, but they're ones that are that people do like they're personal favorites of theirs, but they won't, they say they're not as kind of up to the same level as the films prior to them and some of the, in the films we got coming up. But for me, it's always been a favorite of mine. It's one I usually like to watch every now and then. I still like it, and I still think it's a fun film to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Miranda, any final thoughts?
Oh, no. I think it's one that should be rewatched. Like I said, I lost interest for a second, but I don't know if that's just like my mind frame I was in today. There were a lot of things I didn't remember. So I think it's really interesting going there back and watching these like we are as adults. There's a few that we're going to get to coming up that I have rewatched 1,000 times. So as we get closer into those, I'm sure we'll all have like lots of things to say because they're way more fresh than some of these that we're going through now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Like I said, it's one of my favorites. It just has a special place in my heart for a few reasons. Like I've explained, I loved it as a kid, you know, so much to the point that, and I'm such a Disney nerd that I named my cat after one of the characters from it. And yeah, it's something that you should seek out. The music is great. Mm-hmm. The voice acting is superb, and it's got a fun plot to it. And Napoleon and Lafayette are very underrated in terms of comedy characters. If you like that kind of stuff, you should seek out cartoons like Clue Club. I don't know if you guys ever watched that. There was a similar dogs on that show. It was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon that was out when I was a kid. So let's just kind of go around and talk about generally where you can be found on pods. We'll start with Miranda. Miranda, where can you be found and what's your social media presence?
Social media presence, I prefer to be contacted. I do have Twitter. I'm really bad at Twitter. I'm really bad at Twitter. Most everybody who knows me personally knows I'm blonde. So I make jokes about I'm the dumb blonde Twitter because it's just too fast for me. But I will answer you. It just might take me some time. I prefer to be contacted on Twitter and Instagram. That's where you can usually always find me by looking up Mom's a Nerd. I'm easily found there. My main podcast presence is, of course, here on Pop Experience. I do, of course, Andy and I now have a Muppets pod that is going. I would do the whole title, but it gets me winded. so I do have the Muppets pod going. Of course, I am doing this pod and then Telly and Tea with my Brit friend, Ben. I am still over on the Ginny position doing Geek and Sassy. And of course, you can always find me inside our Pleased to Be Nation group where we chat about anything and everything, and we'd love to have you there. All three of us are there. We all make posts and talk to each other about anything and everything, whether you're part of the wrestling feed or you're here for the Pop Experience. We're all there. We're talking about it all the time. And don't worry, you're not going to get overloaded with links to podcasts. It's more of what fruit would you remove from your life for the rest of eternity if you had to, or how would you take your Pop-Tarts? And there again is only one right answer, and I think Steve is one of the only other people that answered the same way I did, but it's a lot of fun, so it's fun things like that, but it's also oh hey, who watched this wrestling event, or who remembers this one from 1997, or what's your favorite Disney movie out of these? So definitely come join us over there for sure, because we're all there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Steve, what pods do you appear on regularly and social media presence?
Well, of course, besides this, I occasionally appear on Mickey Mount Rushmore, of course, where we discuss various topics either on here on the Pop feed, and we just, of course, have the new one going on the wrestling feed where we talk about different wrestling topics. So that's a lot of fun, a lot of great discussions with some of the picks or lack thereof depending on what on which episodes you're on. Of course, I also have a couple of articles on PlaceToBeNation.com regularly. I have the Vintage Wall previewing, the box office report, and the written equivalent to our to this pod. Of course, my wonderful reviews of Disney, where I went back and reviewed all the films in the canon. And I currently have the wonderful list of Disney, which should probably be wrapping up here shortly. I just finished the songs, and now I'm going through and ranking all the films. So if you want to see where this film ranked in particular, you can check that out on the site. And like Miranda said, the Place to Be Facebook page, lots of great stuff going on over there. That's where you can usually find me.
All right, very good. As for me, yes, this is my primary home. I do have a few shows that appear on the Wrestling Network. That is Making Mount Rushmore, as Steve appeared. That will be a monthly installment, Evolution, which is the quarterly, as well as Great Debate Wrestling. That's another quarterly show. I like to, I have to scratch my wrestling itch, you know, a little bit here. Although, you know, I do love wrestling, but, you know, pop is still my favorite, which is why I am here running the place. And with lots of shows, Laughing Theater is about once a month. That is the live watch pod I do with different guests, and we just have a good time with that. That Miranda mentioned, the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, Muppetational podcast.
See?
That is monthly. That is her and I going through episodes of The Muppet Show as well as Muppet Films. We are really having a blast doing that. As well as Pop Goes the Couch. That is myself, Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Capo, where we review the latest streaming shows weekly. We do a deep dive. Pop Goes the Movies has returned. Hopefully we'll have, when you hear this, we'll have had more under our belt as hopefully the world returns to some sense of normalcy pre-pandemic. And all kinds of great stuff. Don't forget to check out all the feeds that we mentioned in PlayStation Wrestling Network. Miranda mentioned the Jenny position as well as the North-South connection. A little something for everybody on all these different podcast feeds, whether you're wrestling, pop culture, sports, or just geek culture in general. It's just a lot of fun and great to be part of. All right, so I want to say a big thank you, though, to Steve and Miranda for getting together once again to discuss one of my favorite things to do is Disney animated films. All right, so we'll check you out on the next episode when we break down Robin Hood. See you then.